Hey guys, welcome to the next chapter. I'm Prim Sarupapat. Joining us today, former world number one player and US Open champion, also childhood friend, potentially my new marathon coach, Andy Roddick. Hello, Bear. How are you? I kind of threw the marathon coach in there because of the exchange. I don't know how that's going to go. How are you doing?
I'm good. Before the stress point of coaching you in something I know nothing about and or have no skill in.
Yeah, for those that don't know, we had this little exchange on Twitter. Apparently, people during this whole pandemic, some people are actually running 5-10 miles. This one guy ran a whole marathon on his balcony. I don't even know if that's true or if that's possible. It looks like it might have happened, but I feel like I kind of want to try it. I don't know if that's stupid. Is that stupid?
You can kind of have a conflicting answers that lead you to the same ploy. It is stupid and you should do it.
Yeah, because yeah, all you wrote back was just like, yes, you should do it. Cause I sent it out to the Twitter universe. I'm like, should I do this?
Let's be clear though. I mean, my yes was, sure, I'll support you and you running your marathon in your balcony, but it was completely self-serving. I just kind of wanted to be entertained for a little while and check in like randomly, like, you know, in between like cookies, I can check in and see how your marathon's going.
With my injury history, it would be my luck that I would somehow injure my knee while being quarantined. So I think I'm going to shelf that for a little bit. Regardless of what's going on in our Twitter exchanges, how are you doing in the midst of all this? How are you and the family doing?
We're great. It's a weird time. Brooke and I have said, I think this is the most time we've ever spent together. I don't know that there's ever been a month where I haven't gotten on an airplane or, you know, traveled somewhere to do something since, you know, we were 13 or 14 years old. So, it's great. Listen, every time something's frustrating, you turn on the news and realize that people have it way, 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 way worse. So no one wants to hear about, the downside. Our kids get to go into a yard and play, and the family time has been nice. So, kind of choosing to look at the silver linings, and hopefully, it seems like people are buying into the social distancing, which is accelerated timelines, at least from what I've read a little bit, which is great. You're in New York City, so I'm not going to tell you how rough we have it.
No, actually, I was talking to Coach Jeff Capel with the Pittsburgh men's basketball team, and he said the one thing that we are all benefiting from is just reacquainting ourselves with our family. And you just kind of mentioned that. And you and Brooke, you guys are so busy and you're traveling a ton. I know I've gotten to spend a lot of time with my family. So has that just been a pretty cool experience, just being around your kids and your wife that 24/7?
It's been great. We spend a lot of time with our kids daily, but normally it's not both of us at the same time all the time. So we kind of mix and match schedules. She works in Los Angeles, so she'll leave for 4 days. I'll be home. She'll come back. I'll go on a road trip for a night or two to do whatever. And, but kind of the consistency of continuity is something that's been nice.
I know you stay pretty tapped in with sports. I don't know how much you watch games and just live sporting events, but I know you're pretty tapped in and you cover it or you're following it quite a bit. So what's it been like for you with absolutely no sports and no tennis going on right now?
Yeah, I mean, I think you're giving me more credit than I deserve once I stopped my previous job as a sports something. It was, I don't watch too much regularly, so it hasn't been too much of a detour. Coming off of what would have been the Masters was a little painful for me. That's like, up there with my favorite sporting event of the year is Masters Sunday, where I just need kind of, I need to be able to clear my schedule for the 6 hours that kind of leads up to it. So, it stinks without sports. You do realize how much of a unifier sports is. After I think of post 9/11, kind of sports kind of helped heal. There were the ceremonies before. There was the president throwing out the first pitch at the Yankees game. There was in throwing a, throwing a strike. It was an amazing pitch. But, you realize how much you kind of need sports, and it's not there, so it is a little bit strange. But, it'll all shake out. And I just hope that, you know, we get to see it at some point this year with fans. I think that's going to be one of the last things back, is packing a stadium and creating that energy of, you know, 80,000 people on a college football Saturday, or the U.S. Open final, or, you know, whatever it is. I think it could be weird for a little while.
Have you gotten a chance to talk to any of your athlete buddies or any of your colleagues, peers in tennis or beyond about just how they're managing all of this?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's pretty frustrating, and kind of it was coming. And, you know, I think our first confirmed case was January 20th, the same as South Korea. And it kind of felt like something that was in a far away place for a while. But then, you know, we were kind of paying attention to it. My wife, you know, went to Costco in late January for us because she was
following. Are you serious?
Oh, yeah, yeah. My parents are preppers and that kind of whole thing. So she was all over it. But I actually talked to John Isner, and he's been sending me, you know, 2 weeks ago, he was like, do you have a Peloton? How do you do this damn thing? Like, people are actually having to, like, adjust their workout schedules and the whole thing. And he's like, man, you know, I haven't stayed put. And I think for him it was like, you know, Australia happened, you're going to play the rest of your year. And then there was, like, kind of like a hard stop. It went, when it started going, it went very quickly. You know, the big night for me, it was when the NBA just pulled the plug, and it seemed like there wasn't a lot of conversation up to that. I think it was March 11th was when they did it. That was kind of like the line in the sand where people were like, oh, this is going to change very quickly. So, you know, they're adjusting, but tennis is in a weird place though. I mean, you're pulling from the entire globe. I think it's easier to kind of self-isolate an NBA team and kind of figure it out there, but tennis is going to have a challenge coming back because, you know, let's say there's someone who is experienced the pandemic later than we are in the U.S. and they can't travel to play the tennis tournaments. Can you still hold them if there are people who are qualified to get in but can't actually come and play? I don't. Those are big questions that are not going to be easy to answer.
Do you have any thoughts about how they should handle this, whether it's more conservative or aggressive? And I mean that in a sense of, you know, there have been some health officials that have suggested that sports and concerts are the last thing that will return. So they're targeting even fall 2021. Do you have any opinions about that? Should they push it all the way back that far, or should they do it in kind of smaller cycles? Like, let's see how the next couple months go, and then we'll make a decision.
Yeah, I mean, I think we'd be naive to say, hey, we know what's going to come in the next 3 months, and then we know what's going to happen with potentially coming back in the fall. You know, unfortunately, I don't think gathering 30,000 people in close proximity for entertainment purposes is going to be something that's going to automatically come back quickly. I kind of am on the more conservative side, and I say that sensitively just because I know that people need to get back to work, and it's, you know, the longer the runway, the more strain it puts on people's livelihood, the economy, and everything else. But I just don't think you can really play the middle on this thing. You know, it's just this thing you can't see, asymptomatic caring. It's just this crazy thing. And I kind of think forward 3 years, they will have it completely figured out. There will be a vaccine. There will be treatment. There will be, and it's going to be something that isn't going to be a huge deal day to day. But the every decision that's made about this thing, from what I read, it involves testing. The more we can test people, the more we can kind of control. I know the new Apple Google initiative with being able to track people who have it, that's going to be a huge deal. So I don't think we can sit here and pretend to know what the technologies are going to be. Can we test for antibodies? How much does that matter with people who have had it getting back into the workforce? We're learning more every day. So if anyone's kind of not a doctor or a scientist and is trying to project forward 6 months, I'm afraid that's a fool's errand.
If you were playing right now, how do you think you'd be handling this period? Do you think you would have been struggling, or do you think you would have appreciated the long break?
Yeah, probably both. I don't know that it has to. I don't know that you have to choose. You know, the challenge for me would have been like, okay, how do I optimize training not leaving my house? You know, because you have to kind of stay in it. You can't just take a month off and then train normally. You'll get hurt. So for me, it'd be like, okay, I can't actually go out and play tennis in the state we're in right now. So how do I keep my arm going? Do I hit serves against a brick wall and just hope it comes back? You know, so I think my focus would be on being creative with training. You'd have to really keep an airtight diet, because right now I don't know whether I'm hungry or just bored half the time.
Oh, I'm definitely bored. Yeah, no, I'm and probably stressed. Yeah,
I was like, I haven't eaten.
Pizza and ice cream all day yesterday. Yeah. It was not a good day.
I was like, I haven't eaten in hours. So I don't know. I think I would be going a little stir crazy. But the good thing about tennis is there's like a hard stop, right? I think there's definitely no play until July 13th. So at least that helps you space out. Whereas I think the NBA is a little bit more vague with the timelines. We hope to do it here. So you kind of are kind of waiting. I think the fact that there's a July 13th, not before time would probably help with kind of scaling things and being diligent about how you'd prepare.
Yeah, I think tennis is obviously a little different too because of the international component to it. It just changes the whole ball game because you have players and coaches and everybody traveling literally all across the world. It's just completely different from NBA or NFL or MLB where it's just domestic. From our interview, I did an interview which has yet to air, and we were supposed to air it, by the way, in March. And then, things kind of changed a little bit. So we still have it on the docket. But our conversation October was really fun. And I always remember the one thing that you said about your retirement. You moved on from it very quickly, primarily because you started your transition so early. Honestly, when you're 18, when you established your charity?
Yeah, so the foundation was in place. It was a ragtag bunch of events, so it's become something bigger and more organized. But even on the business side, you kind of, I don't think people prepare for the next life early enough. And midway through my career, we were already kind of involved in some different things. So I think the point you're getting at, it made it very easy because I knew what I was stepping into once I stopped.
Yeah. So is that maybe a potential sign, maybe a signal to all the athletes, players out there, that using this layoff might be a time to just start exploring some of the other things that got you, made the transition easier for you?
Yeah, I mean, my mind goes to a different place, and this is, I'm trying to not be tone deaf, but 08 hit. We were sitting on a stack of capital, which at a young age is like a magic potion, and we were able to start our real estate business then. So if I'm advising players who are sitting at home and they're not thinking forward, especially in these times where, kind of interest rates are low and everything else, it's a great time to kind of deploy capital. So I would be pretty bullish for them. They're still going to be able to make large amounts of money and have cash flow, which is very rare right now. In the next 1, 2, 3 years, the NBA will get up and running at some point. Their TV contracts will be in place. So I would really stress spending this time thinking forward to what interests you and what you'd like to build post career.
What were some of the first steps that helped you kind of expand your focus a little bit?
Be very dumb, ask a lot of dumb questions, be dumb once, don't be prideful and not know the answer. And also market opportunities. Listen, I didn't go to college. I didn't graduate from Duke like you.
You say that all the time, but you are so smart and you're so diligent about everything that you do.
It doesn't make it not factual, Prim. But the real estate business was easier. I wasn't trying to all of a sudden do a tech startup or something that was kind of over my head. It was okay. We can buy things. We can sign long-term leases. We know what the cap rates are over a given amount of time. Everything was pretty direct and pretty straightforward. And time was my friend at that point. So, we build it, and then all of a sudden, 10 years later, property values rise. Our cap rates are still the same, and we have tenants. So, it wasn't this the kind of sexy thing. It wasn't something that, investing in a restaurant where you can take your friends to and it looks cool. So, I was very realistic about what I could probably handle at that point in my life and career.
How are some of the lessons that you learned in sport really helping you now from a business perspective? So right now I want you to put your business hat on. And before we, before we started the show, you and I were talking about just the things that are going on in our industries and our professional lives right now. And it's impacting every single industry and causing a lot of crises. But how is your tennis experience helping you now with regards to your businesses?
I'm not sure. I think the biggest gift that we were given at an early age was traveling, understanding different cultures, asking questions of different types of people from different places, getting a read on those people, understanding where if someone comes from here, the processes are very different than, you know, maybe where you're from. And so I think being a bit of a social chameleon is a big advantage in the world of business. You know, but beyond that, it's, you know, listen, I'm investing in smart people outside of our real estate company. So, you know, the grit, the determination, I'm not a founder, I'm not a CEO. So I'm kind of a lazy passive aggressor investor who can try to add value if needed. But I think the person to person communication and lessons learned just from having to deal with people, be in front of microphones at a very young age, kind of be aware of what you're saying and how you're saying it has been an advantage.
Do you feel as though you have to be way more adaptable compared to 6 months ago, just because everything that's going on with the pandemic and how it's impacting a lot of industries and businesses?
I think that's right. And we said off air, and I'm not scared to say it on air, is that, you know, we're invested in 30 some odd companies on the angel side. And it's been a real telling time where seeing the great entrepreneurs that we're invested in are able to pivot and make something out of nothing. And it's been amazing to see and watch. And then you realize which people had good ideas and maybe not a contingency plan and maybe not, you know, are maybe stuck. You know, so it's weird how kind of crazy times, and this is a parallel to sports, where the toughest moments, the craziest times kind of bring out, I don't think they create new types of character, but they certainly exaggerate it very quickly.
Yeah. Actually, I just released a new episode of my podcast, and it has to do with exploring the intersection between sports and business. And I actually pulled one of your sound bites from your interview last fall, and it examines that the commonalities between athletes and entrepreneurs and small business owners. And it is really interesting because I don't know what you how you feel about this, but I feel like the elite athletes who were champions in their sport have a lot of similar characteristics than the high-end, very successful entrepreneurs.
I think that's right. I think you put Michael Jordan's belief system and the way he went about things and, you know, hard work, ego plays a big part in it. And I don't think that gets talked about enough. You get someone like, rest in peace, Kobe Bryant, who was an animal when he played. And then, you know, I hate the fact that he was building this business empire and it got cut short. But, you know, someone who has to be the best and it's this like insatiable need is going to translate across different avenues, if that's, you know, regardless of if that's sports or if that's business. One thing I would say, though, is drawing down the similarities is one thing. I actually think the more important thing is how you have to change from being an athlete, and especially an individual sport athlete, where like your coach does anything you want, your trainer has to do with it. You have this world that orbits around you, and you have kind of one way traffic coming at you, whether it's endorsements, sponsors, appearances. It all kind of comes through you. Whereas in business, you kind of have to go out and get it and be adaptable and understand that just because you were good at tennis most likely means you suck at all things business and you need to accept that and get better. You know, so it is a weird dynamic, and the athletes that have done well kind of post-career have not just assumed because they were great athletes that they're going to be good at everything. It's tough to, you know, for someone like a Kobe to be as successful as he was and then break it down to the ground level and start over. And be the dumbest person in the room and have to learn and kind of go after information. So it is a bit of a different kind of tact from what you're used to.
Yeah, that's actually a really good point. So if there was an athlete that came to you, let's say a tennis player, and they said, Andy, you know what, I think now is the right time to start exploring some of the other things that I'm interested in. I've got a couple things on my plate, but I don't know where to start. Mm-hmm. What would you tell them?
Search your network for smart people. The one thing we have is access to amazing people, brains, and the one thing that I feel very, very strongly and appreciative of is people wanting to help. You can get a phone call returned, which is a thing that, you know, most of the world don't have the luxury of getting. You have to take advantage of that. You have to follow up. You have to do something on time when you say you're going to do it. Do you want to start a tennis line just because you know it? I don't know, is there scale involved with what you're doing, or are you, you know, going to be stuck with spending 90% of your time for something that's delivering 5% of your income? I would say make sure that trade-off is a little bit more palatable, especially if you're still on tour.
Smart. I like it. I like the advice. All right. Well, business aside, you know, I like to have a little fun. So we've been doing this little mini quarantine crib section. Are you ready, Bear?
I guess. We're in my office. I'm not going to leave my office because then you're going to have to put up with my with my crazy kids. But what do you have in mind?
I
what
love
do we need
your
to
kids.
See? I do too,
well,
but they've never been on social media or anything. So.
Oh, I got you. Well, we can blur. We have a blurring device. This is a very family friendly show, but we have the ability to blur different spots.
That's all right. Because so, then they're going to look like they're on Cops or something.
Okay. Number one, where's your favorite spot in the house? I mean, we may not have a choice.
I'm going to go with my office. You know, I'll show you some stuff. So I threw out.
Yes.
I threw out every tennis trophy I had except for like four. And so. You know, a lot of people kind of have them on display.
Why? I know. I read that article where Brooke came back and she said that you threw all these away.
I don't know if you can see that real well. I can't see what you're saying, but that's where my U.S. Open trophy. It's on the floor in our office, so it's not up on anything, and it's next. Yeah, so it's just kind of randomly stuck there. I have. Let's see. That one's cool. That's Davis Cup. I don't know if you can see it.
That's great. Yeah, that's awesome.
This is a cool story. The tennis ball here. When I won the Open, one of the umpires grabbed the ball after I hit an ace and returned it to me like a week later, got it to me, kept it and sent it, which I thought was awesome. That is finishing number one.
Great.
That's my nephew.
Oh, so you did keep a few.
That's my
okay. Aww.
That's my nephew who won the same tournament I did, and so it's like he's in front of it, which is kind of cool.
He kind of has the same haircut than you did when you were younger. That bowl haircut.
I know. I don't think I have any. Oh, this one's cool. There's an SB tucked in between some books.
Oh, I love it. You kept a lot. Okay.
That's it. That's good. That's all of them.
All right. I'm very pleased. That's actually, you know, I thought you might have kept like maybe two.
Oh, wait, hold on. Actually, hold on. It's tucked behind. Hold on. One more. Let me move that. That's a Wimbledon runner-up trophy.
You kept that one?
Well, this one isn't the one you're thinking of. This one is 04.
Oh, okay.
I have one out of three. So I don't.
What'd you do with the other two?
I don't know. I don't know. My mom has one.
Oh,
so
maybe you burned the other one?
No, I'm not like angry. Whatever is what it is.
I'm just kidding.
I don't know if I know where my mom has either 05 or 09. I'm not sure which one she has, but we have one.
Do you have a comfort toy or favorite gadget?
Oh, right.
That's been helping you through this pandemic.
Peloton. I picked up.
You guys have a Peloton?
Right there. Yeah, right in the office.
Oh, that's perfect.
Peloton's big. I actually got one of those these new tunnel machines. Have you seen that? Like you put it on the wall, and it's got the little. It's like a mix between like a TRX, free weights, and machines. It's legit.
I think I have. Is it?
Yeah, it's pretty good. I'm really impressed with the product, and I have no financial stake in it at all. Which I normally just plug products I'm invested in, but this is it's great. It's really awesome.
So those
are probably my two gadgets.
All right, who should we interview next? Who would you like to tag next?
Oh, gosh, I didn't know that was a thing.
No. I'm going to put you on the... Somebody that would be very entertaining and fun to have on the show.
I'm trying to think. Like, in our world, Jim Courier is amazing as far as, like, being able to talk about everything you would want to ask him about. And he could do
it. That's a great one. He lives right here in New York.
He is. He's in Florida right now. So he's not toughing it out like you.
Smart man.
He'd be great. I'm trying to think of other athletes. Larry Fitzgerald is amazing, by the way. He's like,
that's a great
one. Like super entrepreneurial. He's like the most humble guy that's ever been second in every receiving category all time. He's awesome. He would be great.
That's a good one. Yeah. I like those too. All right. Any last minute advice? Because I'm going to try to do this quarantine marathon.
Are you really going to do it?
In my apartment. Yeah, you know, I mean, I could try to start. My producers are going to get really mad at me. I could try to turn around and just, like, you know, I could start and you could just kind of be my coach while I do circles around the coffee
table. So you want me to coach you? You want me to tell you how to run in circles around your coffee table?
Yeah, you know, but I mean, moral support. So, you know more than anything that it's not, coaching is not just about
that's true.
Stuff.
But I will say one thing, as I just thought about you running around in a circle, run both ways so you don't get overloaded on one side making the turns.
Oh, that's a really good. That's good.
That's all I got.
See, I told you you'd be a great
that's
coach.
That's it. That's all I got.
All right, Andy, that's great. I'll run with it. No pun intended. Okay.
How many takes for your 100 volley on the backboard of the basketball court situation?
Oh, did you like that? I think it was probably like 7 or 8.
Okay. What was the highest number you got to when messing up?
It was like 70 something. Oh, that's 78 painful. Or something. Yeah.
That's painful.
For people that don't know, there's this, was it Andy Murray that sent out this 100 volley challenge? So you have to get 100 volleys in a row against a wall or something. And here in New York, we were at a park and they shut down everything. They took off the hoop, but I had a backboard.
That was kind of a gangster move, by the way. Like, I like that. Like, hitting against the wall.
Oh, it was janky.
Because I think Roger was one of the first ones to do it. And I actually ripped him. I'm like, dude, this is like the most, you're so bored right now. This is ridiculous. Like hitting 100 straight ahead at a wall, dude. Like, okay, we got it, man. Like, but the way you did it was kind of also, like, you're having to chase it. It's bouncing different directions. I was more entertained by yours than Federer's.
I know. I looked pretty stiff. I mean, it did not look good. I also got criticized for not incorporating enough backhand volleys. I'm like, I'm sorry. I didn't know this was a thing where I have to show my versatility game.
Why would you do that? Just get 100. Pass, fail.
That's what I'm talking about. I said winning was never pretty. I never won pretty.
Well,
you know this.
Listen, you're preaching to the choir here. I get it.
All right. Well, then I'm gonna pose that challenge to you. Can you do that? You're not gonna do
it.
Why not?
I actually tweeted at Roger. I said we both know I don't like to volley. I'm not doing it. and then I said if there's ever a just push your backhand or chip it, hoping that someone misses, all the while holding serve routinely challenge, then I'll do that.
All right. Fair enough. I know you have some other things to do, so I'm going to let you go. Andy, thank you so much for hopping on the show, and you are welcome anytime back.
You're the best, Prem. Thanks.